Chapter 2. Order. To understand the temper of the historical moment in which the events of this tale took place, one must first acquire an appreciation of the alteration, material, political, and spiritual, wrought by Roman conquest upon the Hebrew inhabitants of Judea. The people respected the Romans for their military prowess and the ruthlessness with which they applied their power, yet hated and despised them as idolaters and agents of evil. The conquered Jews tolerated the legions and administrators of the empire in the certainty only of these invaders' fixed and inevitable overthrow. The male polity of Judea constituted, at that hour, in the vividly recalled triumphs of the Maccabees and the Hasmonean dynasty, a yet formidable fighting force, armed and seething with insurrectionist spirit, if indeed and of necessity covert. Recall, too, that the foundational basis of the Hebrew faith lay in the might and invincibility of their God, the Lord of hosts, who did not, in their view, look passively upon the affairs of his people, but took a fearsome and active part in their protection and defense. Rome, the lawless, would find herself not merely expelled from the Holy Land, but ground to dust beneath the engines of the Almighty, at the hour of his choosing and in a manner that would demonstrate to all the world the majesty of the one God. How, for their part, did the Romans look upon the Jews? The senior commanders and administrative officers regarded the elite of Judea with a keen and deeply puzzled wariness. They did not understand them, their zeal, their piety, and the depth and passion of their identification with their role as recipients of the laws of heaven, of their history of suffering as a people, and their belief in their appointed destiny as purveyors of redemption for all humanity. The procurators and prefects of Rome chose to rule not directly but by proxy, appointing over the subject populace such functionaries of the Jews as could be counted upon to court the favor of the conquerors and to hold their own people in check. As for the meaner Roman orders, these abhorred and detested the Jews. The degree of Latin arrogance toward the natives of Judea knew few bounds. Even those evinced by the Miles Gregarius, the common soldier, serving in what to him was the most remote and forsaken precinct of the empire. The legionaries cursed this hellhole of a posting, peopled by such a pious, refractory, insufferable rabble. To them the Jews were less than beasts, for at least a wild ass or even a dog could be domesticated to provide service and thus justify what few grains or scraps its earthly overlords deigned to cast before it. In contrast, the populace of Syria, immediately to the north of Judea, had accommodated itself readily to the ways of the conquerors. The Syrians traded, they collaborated, they blended in. The Hebrews resisted. Their necks would not bend to the Roman yoke. The Jews rejected every initiative of inclusion and spurned all offers of comity and assimilation. The Romans, as they had done with unbroken dominion in every quarter of the empire, remade the locals' world in the image of their own. They constructed dams and erected aqueducts. They rechanneled rivers and dredged out harbors. Roman engineers made fresh water flow to desert places from mountains hundreds of miles away. The conquerors planted strongholds and fortifications. They erected seawalls and carved out ports and anchorages. Rome built roads, not the two-rut tracks or caravan traces that had sufficed for centuries in this land, but stone-founded highways broad enough for two wagons to pass abreast. Roman engineers made crooked ways straight and precipitous tracks level. Grades and floodplains that had throttled trade for 1,000 years were vanquished now by Roman science and shaped to accept the new throughways. Before the Romans came, commerce in Judea, Samaria, and Idumea was limited to what freight could be loaded onto a two-wheel ox cart or laded within a pair of panniers on the back of a camel or an ass, and to those goods that could be shipped without spoiling. Such perishables as fruits and vegetables and even certain wines and oils could be taken to market only locally, lest they waste upon the way. Then the Romans built their roads. At once, the use of heavy freight wagons became practicable. Of a sudden, one encountered these everywhere, not drawn as before across muck and mire at the dreary pace of oxen, but instead rolling in high form, pulled by teams of mules or horses along the newly engineered thoroughfares. Vehicles with iron-rimmed wheels could make not 5 or 6 miles a day, as the old caravan